You're listening to Kate O'Toole on ABC Radio Brisbane and Queensland.
And it's time to take another little trip through Queensland history as we welcome back Queensland historian Helen Gregory. G'day, Helen.
Hello, Kate.
Happy Father's Day, and I guess it's a good time to look back at some interesting historical fathers of Queensland.
Yes, Kate, and I thought it would be worth looking at two people who made an enormous contribution to improving the lives of children in their own time and in each succeeding generation, and they are Alfred Jeffreys Turner and John Lockhart Gibson. Now, they were both doctors, and they both showed enormous determination in convincing governments to take essential steps to save children's lives and to improve conditions for the health of future Queensland children. And so first to Dr. Turner. He was a paediatrician, born in China in 1861. He studied medicine at University College London and graduated with first class honours, so he was a very bright man. He travelled to Europe in 1894 to have a look at what had been done to conquer the terrible scourge of childhood, diphtheria. And diphtheria killed millions of children. And when he was in Germany, he became familiar with the work of Emil von Behring. And some years later, actually, in 1901, von Behring was awarded the first Nobel Prize in Physiology for his discovery of an antitoxin, which arrested the course of diphtheria. And Turner came to Australia in 1888 and in 1889 became the first full-time medical officer at the Children's Hospital. And in the 1870s, just think about this, that hospital was essential because in the 1870s, 50% of children in Queensland died before they got to the age of five. And of course, at that stage, people believed that children should be kept at home and cared for by their mothers and not go to hospital. So that was one battle the Sick Children's Hospital had to conquer before they could do a great deal to improving that terrible death rate. And diphtheria had a mortality rate of 42% in Queensland because there was no effective treatment. So Dr. Turner introduced the antitoxin treatment in 1895 and the diphtheria mortality rate dropped from 42% to 9%. And so children treated this way in Brisbane were among the first in the world to have this antitoxin treatment, certainly before any children in Great Britain. And von Behring then developed the diphtheria vaccination in 1913, but the first came the antitoxin to treat the children when they were acutely ill. But there are puzzling conditions that affected Queensland children, and conquering two of those brings an ophthalmologist, John Lockhart Gibson, into our story. He was born at Ipswich, educated at the Ipswich Grammar School and at Edinburgh University, where he graduated with first-class honours and a gold medal. He also studied in Vienna and Berlin and London. And so, therefore, he was also highly qualified and he became a visiting medical officer at the Children's Hospital. And they both noticed that children from the hotter parts of Australia were suffering from a very mysterious anaemia. And in 1892, Turner and Gibson revealed the discovery that this anemia was caused by the hookworm parasite. Now, people knew about hookworm causing anemia, but until then it was thought to be an illness that only affected adults, particularly people digging their way to make tunnels through the Alps or working in underground mines. But Turner and Gibson found that Queensland children were infected through their feet. They didn't wear shoes, so the hookworm parasite could enter through their feet. And so the subtropical areas of the United States were delighted with this discovery because they also had this problem of anemia in children. And before long, the Rockefeller Foundation developed its campaign to solve the hookworm problem. Now, tragically, even though the discovery was made in Queensland, the hookworm or the Rockefeller campaign against hookworm didn't come to Queensland for a couple of decades because it took a while to convince the Queensland government that they should also invest in this. But eventually they did. And then Turner and Gibson turned their minds to a high incidence of lead poisoning in Queensland children. And it wasn't like hookworm. At that stage, lead poisoning wasn't well recognised as a disease of children. And so in the early years of the 20th century, Turner and Gibson did much research and revealed that the lead poisoning in children was caused by lead in house paint.
Something that we all know now that, you know, that you think about, but interesting to think that these two Queensland-based doctors were so instrumental in that everyday knowledge that we now have.
That's right. And Dr. Gibson actually had the powdery paint from his own house analysed and lead carbonate was found. And they worked out that paint on Queensland houses dried and got powdery in the hot sun. Some of the children who were affected by lead poisoning touched their veranda railings and either licked their fingers or bit their nails, or some were even seen to collect the raindrops that dropped from the railings and in their hands to lap up the cool storm water. So, and some children apparently even chewed the veranda rails, but we all have had experience of children who would chew just about anything.
Yes, so. Particularly when they're teething. Yeah, absolutely.
But it was a huge battle that Dr. Gibson fought to convince the Queensland government to ban the use of lead in paint. And he had a particular stake in that game because he knew how badly lead poisoning affected children's sight. But finally, all the resistance from the paint manufacturers was overcome. And in 1922, legislation was passed to ban the use of lead in paint. And so you would think that was enough. Three areas of work, diphtheria, antitoxin, hookworm, lead poisoning, had made an enormous contribution. But Dr. Turner particularly wasn't finished yet. He also was very concerned about maternal and child welfare. He campaigned to improve the quality of milk served to children, and he believed very strongly that mothers could benefit from education. And he was a key figure in establishing antenatal clinics in Queensland. And he established the first infant welfare clinic in Queensland in 1909. And he also, this is a subject much on our minds at the moment, public health. And Alfred Jeffries Turner had a big interest in public health. He studied and qualified for the Cambridge Diploma in Public Health in 1901 and was very important in combating the bubonic plague in Queensland in 1900 and making the notification of tuberculosis compulsory so that they could track where tuberculosis was occurring, because at that stage the treatment options were almost non-existent.
So it's all interesting to think about the achievements of these two men. Do you know much about what they're like as people? Does any of that sort of come through the history books?
Yes, very much so. You might think, for instance, that Dr. Turner was very bossy and assertive. He was very determined, but he carried his campaigns with a sort of quiet determination. He had a mild manner, he was known to love children, and he had the nickname Gentle Annie, which was rather lovely. And people described him as having a slight, almost translucent figure and a quiet, small voice, and he couldn't sound his R's. There'd be many children who could sympathise with that. But he had good sense of humour, but he had very subtle strength, and he had great strength. Dr. Gibson, he really, in his uphill fight to get the lead poisoning in paint, lead in paint banned, he really did have a stubborn, long fight. When he was described as a man of strong and emphatic opinions, and he did, as they said, make enough enemies to keep his life interesting, but he also had deep and lasting friendships.
So when does this take us up to? Around about?
Well, this takes us about to the First World War, and they both made a contribution there. Off they went to war. Turner went to England and joined the Royal Army Medical Corps. Gibson joined the Australian Imperial Force in May 1915, and he became a major, and he was in charge of the eye department of the 3rd Australian General Hospital on the island of Lemnos, and that's where many casualties for Gallipoli were treated. And, of course, eye injuries from shrapnel and other conditions were, there were lots of them after that campaign. And Turner, they both returned to Brisbane after the war. Turner became director of the Central Tuberculosis Clinic and first part-time director of infant welfare. And while he was director of infant welfare, the service expanded to, from 14 clinics to 104, and infant mortality dropped from 50% to 35%. 50.7 per 1,000 births to 35.6 per 1,000 births. So he had an impact in that area too. He was also devoted to the study of moths. He had a big Lepidoptera collection, and on his death in 1947, that went to the CSIRO. But sadly, Dr. Turner had no children of his own. He had a devoted wife called Hilda, but they didn't have any family of their own. But Dr. Gibson had three children. And but even though perhaps that's only a small number of children between them, hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of children worldwide owe a great deal to that pair.
They certainly do. They certainly do. Bree in Townsville is saying, do these doctors have any research failures or just a run of good luck and discoveries? Bree in Townsville, it's possible the history books would not pay as much attention to the research failures. I don't know. How would you answer that, Helen?
That's an interesting question. No, I think they did do a great deal of research because especially trying, when something was as difficult as trying to work out how, first of all, they discovered, for instance, that the children did have infestation with the hookworm parasite, but how did they get it? Through their feet. And the lead poisoning in paint, that was years of research, analysing paint, working out what concentrations caused how much illness in children. So I think they did do a great deal of research. And some researchers, I remember reading the biography of a Nobel Prize winner who said that the research that led to his Nobel Prize was a moment of perhaps inspiration, but also good luck. So I do think good luck is recognised as one of the factors, this sort of serendipitous thing that happens that helps a whole lot of other things to fall in place. There's a hard slog, research, though.
Yeah, and I guess the other thing is research failures is an interesting term because when if you're investigating something, just say, just taking the lead paint as an example, if you're investigating that, the scientific procedure would normally be to have a hypothesis and a null hypothesis. So you're saying either this makes a difference or this does not make a difference,
yep,
or this.
Yep.
So you're sort of testing out ideas at that level all the time. So you'll rule one thing out and then go down another path, or, you know, so it's sort of very incremental, I guess.
I think so. And it's important to remember that Turner and Gibson presented their theories and their ideas at medical congresses for people, you know, as often happens with scientists now, to either say, oh yes, I think you're onto a good thing, or shoot them down in flames. So they also had that kind of research technique to be involved with. So they didn't just keep it all secret. They presented their findings. They, you know, looked for contrary opinions in a way.
It is very, very interesting. And as you say, while one of those doctors didn't have any children of his own and the other had three, the influence on children, the children of Queensland more broadly, they kind of mark themselves as fathers of Queensland in a way, caring for children and having an effect throughout generations. Thank you so much for taking us on this little journey through history. Once again, Helen Gregory, appreciate it.
It's my pleasure, Kate.
ABC Radio Brisbane and Queensland with Kate O'Toole.